Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:20 British Summer Time. Today is August 21st, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But first, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, because it has been quite an eventful week. What we saw, particularly in stock markets, was that in China, particularly, the market was accelerating lower into the middle of the week and began to find support from Wednesday and pushed up in the last 2 days, so that it has found support in the area of 3,000 on the A-share index, which top to bottom was in the region of a 20% decline. The other markets in Asia have also been relatively weak in the early part of the week, but firmed up towards the end of the week. And in Europe, we saw today that there was a powerful upward dynamic in a number of markets. Last night, I talked about some markets breaking to new high ground, and today they were followed by a large number of others. And among those markets breaking to new high ground are the Dow Jones, the S&P, and the Nasdaq. And that's rather important because they're breaking to new highs, having been rather weak over the last 10 days or so, and they're reasserting their uptrends. And particularly in the case of the S&P, it's pulling away from this 1,000-point level where it has encountered resistance for much of the last month to 6 weeks. And this is really rather positive action. Government bonds were firm for most of the week, but weak today, and the US 30-year formed a key reversal at the upper side of the range, encountering resistance in the region of 121 and closing out the day at 118.21. So that is a downward dynamic from the upper side of the range. And today's strength in stock markets and weakness in government bonds is at least in part due to Mr. Bernanke saying that the recession was ending due to the stimulus that had been put in the works. And with government bonds pulling back like that, it is beginning to be priced in that rates might be rising sooner than people were estimating not too long ago. This has also been a powerful week in the commodity markets, where oil has been firming throughout the week, broke upwards to a new recovery high in here today and just below $75, closed off the high, but nonetheless, it is been trending quite well over the last month and had two lower, or sorry, higher lows in that time period and has been pressuring the 3 month highs over the last week or so, and does look like we're going to see higher oil prices in the short term. In the rest of the commodity markets, gold has had a rather difficult week of it, but firmed in here today, back above the $950 level, and pressuring the short term progression of lower highs. And with the dollar also looking increasingly like we're going to see it breaking downwards in the not too distant future, that is a fundamental support for the entire commodity complex, and particularly gold being one of the larger markets. Silver was also really quite volatile during the week, but finished out up 27.5 cents, back above $1,400. And platinum found support in the region of $1,200 earlier this week and closed out the week around $1,260. The agricultural commodities were also firmer in here today, with soybeans up 23, and that is also another one that has found support in the region of the 1,000-point level over the last week. So what we are seeing is that the majority of markets are still showing a very firm tone. We've seen that stock markets have been rallying for most of the time since March and had a brief and relatively shallow reaction between the beginning of June and the middle of July. They had a fantastic rally from the middle of July until the recent highs and have pulled back really rather gently. A number of important markets found support in the region of the June highs and are now pushing upwards to new high ground. This is consistent action with a bull market hypothesis. We have in a bull market, the surprises are going to be to the upside. And we now have higher lows that would need to be taken out before any larger reaction could be deemed to be underway. And with these breakouts, clear downward dynamics would be needed to cap these advances. This type of action has been backed up by fundamental news almost on a daily basis over the last 2 weeks, which has helped to support the argument that the recession is over and that we are in a new type of recovery situation. And the argument now, or the big discussion, is more towards how fast is growth going to be rather than whether growth is going to occur at all. Because it wasn't that long ago when the bearish argument was overarching. And when most investors didn't believe that we were ever going to get back into a growth type scenario at all. And people are raising there are, of course, legitimate arguments for danger in the market, but monetary conditions remain very easy. Interest rates all over the world are at extraordinarily low levels. Liquidity is being pumped into the system with abandon by central banks. And those are the types of conditions where assets can appreciate. If we look at how markets performed in the run-up or from 2003 all the way through to 2008, the yen carry trade was a big vehicle for raising cash to invest in higher yielding or better performing assets. But today, we have not only the yen at ultra low interest rates, but the euro and the pound and the dollar are all at extraordinarily cheap levels in terms of what an investor can go out there and buy those currencies or l borrow those currencies at to invest in higher yielding assets. And we look at, for example, interest rates in Brazil, you're getting at least an 8% carry on yen carry or on dollar carries. So there is an abundance of liquidity out there, and investors are certainly moving into risky assets. And the consistency of the moves is there for anyone to see. We have progressions of higher lows, we have successions of ranges one above another, and you can look at, for example, the S&P, and there are three ranges one above another, and it's just completed another range. What we need to see to cap this advance now is a larger reaction, a reaction that pulls back into the previous range, and importantly, something that breaks the progression of higher lows. And none of those conditions have been met. The large reaction that we saw in China was really rather individual. Other China-related markets also came under selling pressure, and for example, Taiwan, which had become one of the more expensive markets in the world, has been quite weak over the last 10-15 days, testing its lows in here at the moment, and obviously catching some contagion from China, and probably the aftermath of the typhoon isn't doing that market any favors either. But what these are leading markets, China and Taiwan, and the nature of their reaction is likely to be much more towards the reversion towards the mean type of activity rather than an outright reversal of the very impressive gains that we've seen. I saw a couple of headlines this week talking about China briefly having moved into a bear market, and that's a nonsense because what what we've seen is that the market rallied 100% over the last 4 or 5 months and pulled back by about 20% and is still well above its ascending moving average. So we can anticipate that there are going to be these sharp pullbacks and consolidations. What we've seen at the very least is that the market is finding support over the last 2 days, that the decline has at least slowed in its intensity. We are definitely seeing more two-way action, suggesting that supply and demand are coming more back into balance as we've reverted towards the mean. We could very well have seen the low for this reaction, although it is probably too early to say that with any confidence, given that we've only had 2 days on the upside from the low. But it is a possibility we need to be open to, given the strength that we're seeing in so many other stock markets around the world, because there are large numbers of them breaking to the upside, and I can't think of any that are making new lows apart from some very small cap markets in the Middle East. And this is bull market type activity. And with a bull market, we are looking for the leaders. And fuller money themes are dominating the nature of this bull market. Every bull market has a supporting story behind it. And in this cycle, the secular theme is the emergence of China, increasingly in India, the emergence of over 3 billion consumers, the big population centers of the world, getting their economic act together and launching themselves onto the global stage and competing and succeeding. That is the fundamental driver. That is what is driving the growth in per capita consumption of commodities, which is driving the entire commodity super cycle. And the challenge in that market is for supply to catch up and to sustain supply in the face of ever increasing per capita consumption of raw materials. When you've got billions of young people entering the workforce in need of education, housing, water, sewage, power, there is a necessity to build infrastructure for those people, and you need raw materials to do it. China is well ahead of the game in getting that done, and there are other countries with just as large populations getting on the road to doing the same type of thing. This is a secular theme which has years left to run. We can play this in a number of different ways, because one, you can play the raw commodities. Two, you can invest in companies that benefit from the growth in emerging markets. And three, you can invest directly in those emerging markets. When one is investing directly in an emerging market, there is the currency concern that one wouldn't perhaps have if one was buying commodities directly or buying domestic companies that are leveraged to growth in the global arena. And what we've seen, particularly over the last 6 months, as markets have rallied considerably, persistently, and surprisingly for large numbers of investors, is that the companies that are doing best are technology shares with a global franchise and strong earnings, or they have strong balance sheets. We've seen that companies that benefit directly, either by selling their products to the emerging markets or have franchises directly in those emerging markets, are doing well. So big global brand names have weathered the credit crisis better than most, and companies that have strong balance sheets have benefited from the persistence of the cash is king motto since we saw the meltdown of Lehman Brothers. The best performing stock markets in the world since October have been emerging markets, but they have been primarily in the growth centers of Asia or in commodity producing Latin America. And if we were to speculate as to where the next investment bubble is going to be created, then we could logically start to pick out those countries that are receiving increasing trade or increasing investment, where investors are taking the abundant liquidity that is in the market at the moment and where they're looking to put it. There is the problem in many of the OECD countries that they became over-leveraged and took on too much debt, that it's going to take time to work their way out from underneath that mountain of debt, and growth is going to be sluggish, at least to begin with, in the best case scenario. On the other hand, large parts of the emerging markets skirted the over-indebtedness of the West. They had their own problems to deal with at the time, and they didn't take on the same type of debt that we did in large parts of Europe, in the UK and in the USA. So they're coming out the other end of the credit crisis in much better shape. They have strong competitive advantages. And there is the likelihood that as more people come to the realization that these countries are in better shape economically than the rest of the world, that more money will flow into them, and that weight of cash will expand the capitalization of those markets, and there's a strong likelihood that we will have asset bubbles developing somewhere in Asia, somewhere in Latin America. But we could also have a bubble developing in some of the commodities. And it is interesting that particularly in the soft commodity sector, over the last couple of weeks, we have seen that supply disruptions are becoming more evident, that the elasticity in the global market for some of these soft commodities is quite thin, or if these markets are inelastic, they're also really relatively illiquid. And while politically it may not be opportune that these markets are liable to supply disruptions, and if an El Niño actually is developing, that will have an impact on at least some commodities, that we could easily see that the place where inflation is going to pick up first is going to be in the commodity markets. We see that industrial commodities are very firm, that they are leading the commodity sector. Oil isn't far behind them, pushing up to new high ground in here today. Soft commodities need to be taken on an individual basis, but they are nearly all firming. Natural gas is the absolute standout in the fact that it was down another 14 cents today, broke below the $3 level this week, and is finishing out the week at 2.79. It's the only commodity I can think of that is actually making new lows. And that's really quite contrary to what some of the gas-related companies internationally are doing, because the liquefied natural gas market is picking up. And if there's an alternative out there for expensive oil, it's cheap natural gas. And it would really only appear to be a matter of time before natural gas begins to fall into line with some of these other commodities. And the way that it's been down now, I think it's either 11 or 12 days, all but one day was to the upside. So that is really quite a persistent decline. The first upward dynamic is likely to cap this decline, and it will rally in the short term, if not having bottomed out entirely. With the amount of liquidity that is being added into markets, it hasn't been a problem because the velocity of money was so remarkably slow and had fallen from such high levels. And because most of the liquidity that's been added has been in short-term paper, sanitizing the system isn't particularly difficult because it is short-term paper. It can be taken out of the market relatively quickly. Although what we have seen is that increasingly central banks have been buying up long-dated paper, and that's more difficult to take out of the system once it's in there, because investors will tend to hold on to long-dated bonds. So that may be more difficult to take out of the system, and there is the ongoing risk that the inflationary pressures that could be unleashed by the amount of liquidity that has been added into the system will not be managed correctly. And we have to remember that with the immense amount of debt that is outstanding and is waiting in the wings to be issued because these stimulus packages aren't free, and governments are going to be going back to the debt markets repeatedly over the next few years to help fund their deficits, and most countries have been running deficits over the last year, and some of these deficits are in the trillions of dollars. So there is no shortage of paper out there, and that's not a bullish case for government bond prices. It would appear to be only a matter of time before investors begin to look for and get higher yields. And it is going to be a fine balancing act for governments to be able to manage the issuance of a vast amount of government paper without paying over the odds for it. What is almost certain is that the US Treasury bottomed at 2%, and we're unlikely to see 2% yields on the 10-year anytime in the near future. And if it's bottomed, it would be only then a matter of time whether this turns into a short or a long base formation is still up for grabs. But if this market is bottomed, then we are unlikely to see such high prices or such low yields again for a considerable period of time. With the quantitative easing and the amount of debt that's outstanding, and the way that currencies are being diluted in this environment, the outlook for some of what are deemed to be reserve currencies is grim, given the way that the currencies are being diluted with the amount of liquidity that's being added into the market. And that's inflationary by definition. Whether that inflation shows up or not in the short term is irrelevant. What we are going to see those inflationary pressures building in assets where it can be seen quickly, sooner rather than later, and they have the opportunity to sanitize the system and take out the excess liquidity. But there are repercussions for every action, and if they were to do that, we would quickly see that the impressive gains that we've seen in risk assets over the last 6 months would quickly get pulled back if we saw this tightening that would avert the building inflationary pressures that are out there. So it is going to be a very fine balancing act. The inflationary outcome is not certain, but it is probable because of the political pressures that will be there when inflation does begin to rear its head. Economies are still likely to be fragile, and no one is going to want to repeat the Japanese problem, which was firstly not to add enough liquidity. They certainly haven't done that one, but then they removed it too quickly and threw the economy into a decade-long deflation. No one is going to want to remove the stimulus too quickly. And with that in mind, the likelihood that we're going to see interest rates moving upwards this time or anytime this year is remote. We're likely to see some country move on rates maybe later this year, early next year, but it will take time before we see rates getting back to the levels they were when this whole crisis kicked off. When we look at the yield curve, it's right up there at the highs that it ha the highest levels it's been at in the last 20 years, and by yield curve I mean the spread between the 2 and the 10 year in the US. It was inverted back in 2006 and 2007. And the next time it becomes inverted will be a warning shot that the bull market that we're currently enjoying, it will be coming to an end. But given the fact that it is close to its highs today, and it could easily take a few years at least before it gets back to an inverted position, we are at in the early stages of this bull market. And while markets remain quite consistent, we can give the upside the benefit of the doubt. There is no bull market that unfolds without having the odd larger reaction. And the environment is more high risk now, particularly for some of these better performing markets, which are closing in on their all-time highs. We see, for example, that Chile is close to its high. Brazil is at 57,000 in here, and the high isn't particularly far away. When we look at Indonesia, it's a similar case, and a large number of the better performing emerging markets are not significantly below their highs at this level at the current time. It would be really unsurprising if we were to see some of these markets encountering resistance between now and when they actually go and test their highs, because people will have looked at those highs and it wasn't that long ago, so it will still be in the public consciousness and think, well, we know what it did the last time it was up here, and yes, we've had a very good run. And for some of these emerging markets, the definition of what we're seeing is a V-shaped recovery in stock markets. The bigger capitalization markets in North America and in Europe are going to be slower to recover, and you could say the same thing for their economies. Japan can also be thrown, large cap Japan, I should say, can be thrown into that pot as well. But what we are seeing is that a number of these markets are at the upper side of their base formations, and some of them are breaking upwards. And by definition, a base formation is a big range, and a big range is an explosion waiting to happen. If they are breaking upwards from their bases, this is important. This is base formation completion, and we could easily see them rallying significantly. But there is a question as to whether that is actually going to happen right now, because we've already had a very powerful move to the upside. What we can certainly say is that the moves that we've seen are still consistent, that when markets have become a little bit overextended, they have pulled back and consolidated, and those consolidations have been shallow. And that means that we need to see something larger to really start to question the integrity of these advances. With the amount of liquidity that's being added into markets, and with the rough way in which the value of fiat currencies is being or the bandied around, that's a case for investors to start to look to assets that have a solid value. So they're buying shares, they're buying commodities, and gold has been the only real money for thousands of years. And it's been consolidating below its highs in the region of $1,000, $1,020 for the better part of 18 months, pushing on a little bit longer than that at this point. And it's one of the few commodities, certainly one of the few major commodities, that is within striking distance of its all-time highs. And with the fact that it is slowly, it is volatile, but volatility is not surprising in the precious metals, which is why they are best bought following reactions, which has been a mantra at Fuller Money for as long as I've been here, and that's since 2003. And we We look to what gold is doing, and it continues to look like a consolidation below $1,000. And we know from past experience that when it has consolidated below its highs for in the region of 18 months, it has formed powerful advances subsequently. So while it is volatile at the moment, and while we have dynamics in both directions, and while it is uncertain as to the direction that it is going to have one week to the next, over the medium to longer term, the trajectory is upwards, and it is likely to break upwards at some point in the next few months. What we've seen also in the past is that gold is often the first one to move, but rarely has the largest percentage advance. Silver, we've often regarded as high beta gold, and it may not be the first of the precious metals to break upwards to new high ground, and of course, considering the distance it is from its actual all-time highs, it would be unlikely that silver is the first one to break to new high ground, but it will almost certainly form a major catch-up move if gold does break to new high ground. If gold breaks successfully above $1,000 and sustains it and improves upon it, we would expect it to be performing in all currencies. And it is having more difficulty doing that than it has in the past because the dollar is comparatively weak. And with the dollar, it rallied really quite significantly because of the credit crisis. And as investors sought sanctuary by raising cash and depositing it in dollar accounts, and they were willing to accept zero yields for doing that because of the risk in other assets. But if risky assets are performing and attracting investors back into the emerging markets or back out of the out of cash deposits, then the reason for holding the dollar becomes less obvious, and certainly one wouldn't be holding dollars for yield. And I don't think anyone could make a positive argument that the Fed is in there supporting the dollar. So a weaker dollar would be better for American manufacturing, and it's difficult to make a fundamental case for why it would be a strong currency in this environment, particularly with the amount of debt that is being issued and the number of dollars that are being printed. And it has been pushing back down towards the 78 level on the dollar index and looks increasingly like we're going to see a sustained move to the downside. In the medium term, that would be a strong fundamental or technical support for commodity and stock markets. So, in conclusion, we can look around the world, and it is quite evident that we are in a new bull market cycle, that the fuller money themes are performing best, and that we have a large number of relatively consistent uptrends in evidence. And until though that consistency begins to break down, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, and by definition, in a bull market, the upside is going to be where the surprises are. And with that, I think I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.